Hey there, green future growers. Thanks for joining us today. If you're new to the show, I hope you'll subscribe on iTunes or your favorite Android app, and let's get growing. Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Welcome to the Organic Gardener podcast today. I am super excited to introduce my featured guest, Marla Esser Close, who's the Green Home Coach. And I just know, green future growers, that your entrepreneurial brains are going to be spinning and you're going to be surprised by this visionary leader in green practices, because she inspires, she educates people how their home can be part of the solution through green and sustainable actions. And we were talking in the pre-chat a lot about how there are really simple things that you can do now, even if you can't have a garden or if you want your garden to be more than it, or just things that you can do in your home that can help you have a healthier life that you might be surprised about. And she has an amazing book called Living Green Effortlessly. So we all know I'm going to like that part. It's called Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices to a Better Home. And she also has a podcast that she co-hosts called the Green Gab Podcast, which is actually where I found her. So I'll be quiet and I'll let Marla tell us about her amazing life and her business and her podcast and all the great things she has going. So welcome to the show, Marla.
Thank you, Jackie. I absolutely love that you say I have an amazing life. Thank you.
Well,
some days
you do.
It doesn't feel like that, but you know, if you fake it, you make it, right? And some days are amazing and some days have a lot of opportunity to be amazing.
For sure. And I, you know, I have definitely had my struggles and my challenges, but I was just talking the other day, I posted this thing about, I wrote this book called Dreams Do Come True. Cause I guess I really feel like I've had a bus life. Like my main website is called awesomemontana.com. And it's just, I don't know, like I had to work really hard to get where I am. And I definitely, you know, like I said, I still have my challenges, but I am definitely feel that I'm blessed every day. So what I love about you is just your attitude and your knowledge that you share with people and your passion for the planet. And I just love all the things that you've got going there. So, and I don't know if I told you this. So we had talked a couple of days ago on a separate conversation that I have my real estate license. And like I say, what I did is I graduated from real estate agent to investor, and Mike and I are very interested in the whole real estate thing. So that's part of why I know so much about curb appeal.
Oh, gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. And you know, realtors are a link between homeowners and home buyers and the home industry. And there's just a very kind of back burner conversation going on right now. And it's starting to come more to the front burner that realtors understanding more of this and to be able to get into the conversation about what green means and what it means to a homeowner. And this whole thing, go green means nothing. What's important is going green, taking action with green practices is the road to get us to a better destination. So yeah, the whole idea, the whole mantra, go green is great, but we haven't told anybody what to do to go green. So I'm all about action. I'm all about, let's talk about what really works and let's inspire you to go do it and go try it. And you're going to fail a few times because failure's how we learn. I put a great post on Facebook yesterday. I wish I could remember it, but it was what failure was first attempt in learning, I think. But it was a really great little quote. I thought, oh, I got lots of those.
Awesome. Well, we could put it in the show notes.
I will. Matter of fact, I'll post it on my Green Home Coach Facebook page too, so we can link it up there.
Okay.
Just to remind me. But You have to go do things in order to figure out what works. And, you know, how many light bulb attempts did Thomas Edison make and prototype before he got one that worked? It was over 1,700. Yet we have to persevere. We have to keep sticking to it. We have to keep going. So finding ways that we can talk about with our friends and our family, and doing it in a way that's non-confrontational and gets everybody excited to do stuff rather than the blame game is really what I'm all about. So there's a whole bunch of stuff out there that's going to tell you about all the nasties and how horrible it all is, and it is. It's depressing. It's like, oh my gosh, we're never going to fix this if you just wallow in all of the bad stuff. But on the other side of the coin, there's a lot of people and a lot of ingenuity and a lot of things that can happen right now that we don't have to wait to invent. We don't have to wait to take action on. And a lot of those choices are just super simple. They're just a different choice than what we've been making in the past. So we have to get out of our habits and get a little brave. And that's really what the book's all about, is let's talk about some of the ways you can make a simple choice, but a different choice that's going to improve your living in your home.
Okay, you got to give us an example. Give us like one easy choice that you can make today. Listeners can go home and do right now.
Go home, take every incandescent bulb out of your house. If you have to throw them in the trash, throw them in the trash. You're going to throw away the same amount of stuff, whether it works or not. Replace them with LED light bulbs, light emitting diodes. LEDs are everywhere now, and they're very inexpensive. I have found them for as little as $2 a bulb. They last a long time, so they are hassle-free. You don't have to change them. They're totally recyclable because they're an electronic component. They give better light. They come in tons of different shades of light, because when they first came out, everybody's like, oh, they're too bright, because Americans don't like the whiter light like a lot of Europeans and Asians do. But here's what's going to happen when you replace your lights with LEDs. And they're better than CFLs in my estimation. They last longer. The cost have come down so much that you can just skip CFLs. And CFLs are harder to recycle, and they have a little trace amount of mercury in it. So it's not enough that it's going to harm you by itself, but do you want people you know working in factories with mercury if they don't have to? So, you know, let's just up-level the whole game and care about everybody and not do as much mercury as we have to. So anyway,
okay,
so LEDs.
Can we back up a sec? What's an LED light? So that's different than these spiral things that we've all bought over the years, and these are not the things that like my electric company gave me. Like, I need to get rid of these too. What's an LED light?
CFL.
I have one then.
Yeah. So, see, good question, by the way. Really good question, because my builder had all CFLs in my home too. So CFLs are the little squiggly ones, and they stand for compact fluorescent light bulb lighting. I can't remember what the L is. But they are, you know, the long tubes of lights that we see in offices and stores and everything that in the old days they hummed.
In school.
Yeah, and in school. So those are fluorescent tube lighting. So a couple of decades ago, I'm not sure exactly when, a while ago, somebody figured out that they could take that long tube approach and put it into a spiral, because the way that the fluorescent tube lighting works, it needs a certain amount of linear room, a certain amount of length in order for it to function, because it lights up a gas. So somebody figured out that they could just squirrel it and make it into a bulb that could go into residential fixtures and lamps and things of that nature. So it was a far better option than the incandescent, because it used a fraction of the energy to produce light. Here's the other well-known, or not so well-known, fact about incandescent lights, the kind we've been using for 120 years since Thomas Edison invented them. Did you have an easy bake oven when you were a kid, Jackie?
I did.
What did you use to bake a cake with your easy bake oven?
I have no idea. A light bulb?
Yep. Usually a 60-watt or a 100-watt light bulb. A light bulb gets hot enough to bake a cake. Most of us never think about it.
So actually, for me, we have the opposite problem, is trying to find those, because like Mike likes to keep one in the pump house, and he might have got like an official one down in the chicken, but like I know he used to have one in the chicken house too.
To keep it warm.
For warmth, yeah. I've always been surprised that was enough to keep our pump house warm.
So if you live in an environment where you're air conditioning your home a major part of the year, you're paying extra in energy and in money to overcome the heating effects of your light bulbs if you're still with incandescent light bulbs. So that's why we don't need to do a matter of fact, they're phasing out the upper wattages of incandescent light bulbs. And there are specialty applications like in a chicken coop to hatch little chickens or
to heat a pump house
or to bake a cake. So there are applications where we want them, but for lighting, maybe not so much. So the next step that we all went to was CFLs, the squigglies, right?
Right.
Because that was the best option we had. And I started testing LEDs, oh my gosh, 8 or 10 years ago. And they
were wrong? Sorry. Are LEDs not Christmas lights?
Oh, that's how they started. Well, actually, LEDs started as the little lights on your computer in your car, like the little indicator lights. Because an LED is light-emitting diode. So it's actually an electronic component. And what somebody finally figured out is if they combined enough of these light-emitting diodes, I'm kind of techie here, but that's my engineer background talking in. But if you combine enough of these little diodes and you do them in the right colors, they emit light that we can use in a home, an office, in a setting, you know, an interior setting, that actually gives us light to read by. Because you need enough light, and there's all kinds of technical terms I could get into, but it's called lumens. So you need enough lumens in order to have enough light to do things like read or sew or cook or read a recipe or whatever you want to do. And when LED light bulbs first came out, they weren't great quality of light, so they were kind of hard to use. And they were expensive, so they kind of got a bad rap. But that changed really fast, and it's changed fast enough that if you have to go buy a light bulb tomorrow, buy an LED instead of a CFL. If you're replacing light bulbs in your house, if you have incandescents, replace them now with LEDs. If you have CFLs, the squigglies, you can leave them till they burn out, which should be hopefully several years. They should have a multi-year lifespan depending on what kind of CFL it is and the quality. But when they burn out, recycle them. Most big box stores, like the hardware stores, I think even some of the big box electronic stores have CFL recycling in the front of the stores.
It's
really important to recycle those. They are not to be put in your single stream curbside recycling. Ever.
No, I know. I think mine are sitting like in a drawer because I don't know where to take them.
Try one of your big box stores.
Burnt out ones in the
Like your big box electronics store or your big box hardware stores usually have recycling boxes up front.
Good to know. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
This is so interesting because I just talked to a woman from a business called TerraCycling yesterday, and they have
TerraCycle's
these...
wonderful. They do such great work. Sorry, cool. You got me all excited.
They actually reached out to me. And so I was going through their website and they have tons of where you can just, and they even work with companies. Like if you buy a shampoo bottle and it's not recyclable at your local place, you can go to their website, download the sticker and they'll ship it off for free. Like you just, I don't know how it works. So, but very cool. Well, how interesting. Okay, so light bulbs and get LED light bulbs.
Yep. And you should be able to find them in pretty much any store now. I even find them in the drugstore chains.
That's so awesome, because I've been going to the, when I look at light bulbs in the store, I have no idea what to do anymore. I'm like, what are these? What am I supposed to buy? Where are those ones? One Christmas, Mike and I gave light bulbs to everybody. That was our present.
That's
was
a
like
great
green
idea.
Light bulbs.
Okay, you just gave me a great idea because I was looking for a new little freebie to invent, and I'm going to do how to buy light bulbs.
Oh, cool.
That's a great one.
Okay. So
yeah,
we haven't even really started out the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you got to doing this, because you're a NAHB Master Certified Green Professional and a LEED AP, which LEED, L-E-E-D. I'm not sure what an AP is, but you could tell us about those and tell listeners what LEED means. And do you listen to Pat Flynn? Do you know who he is? Pat Flynn from the Smart. Oh, my gosh.
I've heard the name, but I don't listen to him yet.
Smart Passive Income Show. But before he started the Smart Passive Income Show, he got into online businesses because he's this guy. He's really big in the podcasting world, but he was an architect. And, like, he graduated and started at this great firm and had this future right when, like, the crash started, you know, like in 2007, 2008, I think. And so he had this little sweet family, and he's like, what am I going to do? And he was really into he took the LEED certification course. And when he took it, he was publishing all his blog notes. He took notes for the test as, like, a blog. And then people, like, that took the test from reading his notes, like, started sending him money even before he put them together into, like, a program, just to say thank you, because his notes had helped them so much to take the exam. But to me, like, whenever I hear LEED, I always think of Smart, a Pat Flynn. Sorry.
That's awesome. Because actually my daughter is taking the LEED AP in the next few months, and I know she's been studying for it. She's got her LEED GA. So let me back up. So LEED is Leading Environmental and Energy Design. Oh, wait, I'm not sure I said that right. But it is a program sponsored by the U.S. Green Building Council, which is nationwide, and it is a accreditation for professionals, for people. And so that AP is an accredited professional. So it means that I've gone through the training to understand green and sustainable practices as they are relevant to a building and a home. So it is a way of knowing, if you're working with a professional, whether or not they've been through some training. So there's different levels for LEED for an accredited person. So GA is the entry level, Green Associate. And then you go on for an accredited professional, which is the higher level. And then if you've been at it for a super long time, you can be a fellow, but there's very few of those. And then you can also specialize, like in interior design or operations and maintenance or homes. So you can have a specialty, or you can stay as a generalist. One of the reasons LEED is so recognized nationwide, even though I mainly do some other programs for the residential side or work with them, but LEED is also a certification for a building, a neighborhood, or a home. So they actually have another program that will certify the actual building and how it's run according to green and sustainable practices. So it can go either way. The Master Certified Green Professional is, again, an accreditation or a designation for me as a person that says I've been through education to know what green means. It's very similar to the LEED AP. And then there also is a program that I work with on the National Association of Home Builders side called the National Green Building Standard. So this is all a bunch of alphabet soup, but here's what you want to take away from this. If you want to certify, so if you want that third party stamp of approval that my home has been through and been checked out by a third party, and when I go to sell my home, that certification stays with the home, and I can typically sell it for more money and faster because I have that third party stamp of approval that said my home does what it says it does. So that's why the certification thing is really becoming more and more in the conversation. A lot of people building commercial buildings and multifamily buildings are also finding that a lot of their financial investors are requesting they have some sort of green or energy efficient certification because they've found that these are better buildings to invest in. So that's kind of why that certification thing matters. But what I'm trying to do is take what I've learned through those programs and working with those programs and certifications and the knowledge I get from there, and then translate that into something meaningful for those of us that are just out living living life and translating And that's what's kind of crazy, is there's all this great information out there, and at this, you know, just there's tons of it, right? At this company level, at the organizational level, at the news level. And very few people are translating what that means to you in your home, sitting there today, drinking your coffee or whatever. And that's what I am working to do, is make this part of our conversation. That's why I love what I do with the podcast, is that we have these kind of conversations, Jackie. We have what I call coffee talk conversations about topics that people may not have heard of before. and that they can take that topic and turn it into something actionable they can do in their own homes or their own lives.
Okay. So let's hear some more of them.
So how I got started was through, actually I grew up with a grandmother that was a young woman in the Depression. So I was kind of grew up with this waste not, want not mentality. And then about 10, 12 years ago, well, maybe 15 years ago now, my daughter had this really horrific allergic reaction to, it ended up being detergents, so commercial grade detergents when we were on a vacation. And that got me started to get chemicals out of my home. So kind of started on that back at a time when it was not as easy to do as it is today. And then I ended up a few years later going into a friend of mine's startup company where he was building a small energy consulting practice. And what was so cool about that is that I got an opportunity to learn the green and sustainability climate and the people and the organization in St. Louis, where I lived at the time, from the inside out. And there's an amazing amount of resource and organizations and thought practices really going on in the St. Louis area. So I really had this chance to kind of grow up with that and grow up in the industry in that. And when my friend and I decided to part company and go two separate directions because we had some different life goals, I went off and started my own company. And I worked with builders primarily for about 5-ish years on these green home certification programs. But primarily what I did was I did a piece of the certification for homeowner education and documentation. And I actually built a software tool that we worked with them. We offered a white glove service, and we still do, where we would customize the software to help builders meet the homeowner education and documentation requirements. Basically how to run your house, right? Homeowner manual. And we all need that, by the way. But that's how I really kind of got my real life experience, if you will. You know, having all these letters behind your name doesn't mean squat if you don't have some experience. So I got all kinds of experience from that. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the fun. So about a year and a half ago, I really wanted to be able to serve a larger audience. And I'd had this dream about taking a big part of the business online. And through some personal occurrences that happened that basically froze me from being able to do any more project work, the universe afforded me the time and the opportunity to start the podcast and to finish my book. So that really changed the direction that I was going in. And it's just kept going since then. And we've recorded, oh my gosh, I think 60 plus episodes on the podcast. We're not near what you are, but we just started a little over a year and a half ago, not even a year and a half ago. The book hit in January of 2017, and we're just really starting to get that out. Anybody wants to find it, they can go to greenhomecoach.com, and there's multiple options to buy it on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. So I'll put a plug in for those folks. Thanks for carrying the book. But it's just been, it's been really fun and really exciting to see how many people are getting this conversation and they want to understand how to get into the conversation. Because this whole green thing, ironically enough, I think with President Trump deciding that the United States would no longer be a part of the Paris Climate Accord, I think a whole lot of people kind of stood up and raised their hands and said, well, we're still doing this. And I'm noticing a whole bunch of organizations and companies and individuals paying attention to what they're doing and wanting to learn more about what they can do. But it's talked about differently now than it was, say, 5 years ago. I think part of that's because some of this is more ingrained in business models in our day-to-day life, and we expect there to be recycling facilities around, and we expect there to be curbside recycling. We expect to have products in our homes that are safer and healthier for us and our families. And so I do think the conversation is changing. We're not done. We have a long way to go. But I do love being able to celebrate that we are making things happen.
Me too. And that's what I always talk about. Like, I love millennials because I feel like millennials are, it just kind of comes natural to them to,
it does.
you know, have totally. Some social responsibility from their company, some environmental responsibility from their companies, and the products they buy and the places they shop and the services that they use. And they just, you know, they're going to be a little pickier and they want the best for their kids. And they're very, to me, very conscious, like we were talking about in the pre-chat, you know, moms who are getting into this because they really care about the health of their children. And as a teacher and an educator, you know, I certainly care about the health and nutrition of my students, and just, you know, trying to engage them and get them excited about, you know, taking care of our, I don't know. And just for me, like, I always get frustrated, like my administrators and people, because like I can't not recycle. If you're gonna give me food, or I can't not compost. If you're gonna give me food in my classroom, I'm gonna compost it somewhere. I can't just throw it in the garbage. I had the hardest time this year because the kids ate in the classroom and everything came in styrofoam and plastic, and just, you know, I don't even have a sink in my room. So trying to recycle, so much of it went in the garbage. And I just kept thinking, you know, we have what, 18 classrooms in my school? So that's 18, you know, 350 kids, and every one of them's getting, you know, a plastic fork one day, or a plastic bowl with a banana split made out of bananas and yogurt and blueberries and strawberries. And, you know, it comes in a plastic banana split bowl with a banana split with a plastic spoon. And, you know, or their oatmeal comes in styrofoam, or everything. Every day there was something, it seemed.
Right. And so that's like one of the choices that I am very conscientious about right now, is looking for things that are packaged better. Especially, I hate buying stuff that's packaged like three times. You know, like there's a plastic container and a plastic wrapper in a box. It's like, eh. But sometimes you have to make trade-offs, and you can't always make that choice. And that you have to be gentle and kind to yourself, right? You have to have some grace. That if you can do something 80% of the time, then you're making a really great contribution. And that's really what I want people to know, is just do five things different. Do five things better. Do five things a little smarter. When next time you go to the grocery store or the hardware store or the whatever store, take 5 extra minutes and read the labels and make a different, better choice. That's all. That's all you have to do to get started.
Do you want to tell us about some ideas like people can do when they're at the store? Like, that's one thing I always struggle with. Like, my head goes back and forth. You can't pay this extra money. Your mom would think you're being spoiled. If you buy that, you're buying the wrong thing. Like, I can stand in front of the coffee aisle, or like in front of vegetables, like some expensive lettuce or something, and go back and forth looking at the organic version and looking at the regular version for like 10 minutes, like so many times.
But you, of all people with organic gardening, know that the value of organic is multifold. So organic is not just healthier for us as individuals, because we're not getting all the pesticides, we're not getting all the stuff that's added on, the insecticides, the synthetic fertilizers, but we're also supporting people, real live people that we don't know, for them to have a healthier encounter with the land and with their work, to provide us with a better product. So, for instance, farmers handling, you know, big scale farmers that handle a lot of synthetic chemicals and a lot of traditional commercial farming methods, the rate of cancer in those folks is pretty darn high. And I want to support people having a better quality of life, not just me having a better quality of life. So, yeah, sometimes I'm going to pay a little bit more money to buy organic. I'm not gardening this year. I started, but I typically grow a little bit of my own food at least, and I've always grown it organically, or at least I can control what goes on it. But if you can't control it, then helping somebody else to do it for you doesn't just help you, it helps them. And I think a lot of us kind of forget how tightly tied the whole idea of green and sustainable practices are tied to people, not just planet. And in my world, community and the world are about people first, and then people need a place to be. So that's our, you know, that's our planet, our world, where we are. But I'm a relationship person. I am so much about people. And, you know, I watch people suffering because they have fewer choices. So if I can do something to help them have more choices and better choices, then I'm not only helping me, I'm helping them. And that's a piece I don't think a lot of us think about. So in your home, some simple choices you can make.
Cool.
Number one is study where your home has a lot of heat and light coming in, especially through windows. So for instance, if your home has east or west facing windows, you may get a lot of afternoon or morning sun in them. That's a lot of glare and a lot of heat. You can take a very simple action and put up some kind of window covering that blocks that light. I've used everything from insulating curtains or drapes to very lovely dual cell blinds that filtered the light and the heat and insulated it, that still let through a beautiful filtered light. That's what I had in my last home, and I loved them. They actually, I even filtered out some of the noise, and I didn't really want to spend all the money to replace windows, which, by the way, is the first thing a lot of people think they should do, is replace their windows. And that's from a return on investment, oftentimes one of the last things you should do. And so, yeah, point in case, kind of think through the easier solutions first. So light and heat coming in your windows is a big one. You might even put an awning on the outside of the window to protect you from the high summer hot sun. I've watched people put trellises with plants climbing up them to shade a window from the outside. If you have an option to shade a window from the outside, I prefer that, because that way the heat's not getting to the window at all. But if you don't have that option, or if it's too challenging, then at least blocking the heat before it comes into the house is going to help as well. So blocking the heat and the light is not only going to improve the quality of the light in your home, but and still have daylight when you want it, it's also going to lower your cooling bills, because you're not going to have as much hot air to have to work with. And it's going to increase your comfort. So there's something pretty easy. The last insulating curtains that I bought at a big box store, and they were extremely reasonable. And they also darkened the room, because it was for my teenage son, and he loved being in a dark room. So they kept out the draft, they kept out the morning sun, and you know, really increased his experience in that room. So there's something super easy. We talked about
LED. I love all of that. And maybe even like you talked about the outside trellis door, you might even think about planting a deciduous tree where the leaves are going to shade your house in the summer, and then they're going to be gone. So you're getting that passive solar heat in the winter.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, you can landscape your entire home site to help make your home more energy efficient. And these are techniques that have been used by human beings for generations. Things like putting trees up for windbreaks, or plantings around, you know, a couple of feet out from the foundation of a home to insulate the foundation of it, to use trees or trellises or plantings to shade windows or roofs if you're not planning to put solar panels on your roof. So these are things, and then you get the added benefit of having nature right there, which the psychological benefits, as you well know, of nature are awesome. And you could even do edibles and raise food. And you're raising it. You know what's in it. So there's all kinds of things that have multiple benefits. You kind of get to pick which benefit you want to start with. And then all of a sudden you have all these other benefits that come with it.
Do you have any experience with green? That's interesting, because I was just listening to, I had interviewed this boy, Hunter Linden, a couple of years ago when I first started, and we talked about the Clinton initiative to put green roofs on buildings to reduce air conditioning costs in the summer. Have you done any of that?
I haven't, but there was a company in St. Louis that was a green roof solution provider, and there are several buildings in St. Louis that had green roofs. Matter of fact, several of the buildings in the Beijing Olympics had green roofs from this company in St. Louis. But one of the things you have to watch out for with green roofs is you have to make sure that the roof can support the weight, because you basically are having, you know, soil and plants and usually a container on the roof. So you want to make sure it's structurally sound enough. But for instance, if you've got a flat roof in particular, painting it white, if you can't put on a plant roof, painting it white's a great option. It will save so much money. I've even seen some articles now where they're starting to paint streets and parking lots white because it reflects the heat rather than black, which absorbs it. There's another simple choice. If you are building or remodeling or replacing a roof, choose a lighter color for your roof. if you are in a climate that is hot or warm much of the year, because a dark roof just absorbs the heat and you're just adding to the work that house has to do to keep you, the occupants, comfortable. So again, simple
and
choice.
It's important also because, like, people don't seem to talk about this enough, but Al Gore talked about it a lot when he was running. And to me, it's always, this is what scares me, is like the air conditioning knocking out our electric grid. Like, our electric grid is antiquated, and when the air conditioning's booming, you know, that's when the electric grid can go down. And, you know, to me, I mean, here I am in Montana. I can live without electricity, give or take. I mean, granted, knock on wood, I love my fridge, but I would figure something out. But a lot of people, you know, all of a sudden their whole lives shut down. You know, we can live without,
yeah,
you know, I'm still going to have running water and stuff.
Remember a few years ago when a whole huge part of the East Coast was down?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember how long. I know one of my good friends.
I think
it was Hurricane Sandy,
right?
No, it was a power out. It was a grid failure. And I remember she lost everything in her refrigerator and her freezer.
Yeah.
Because it was on for so long. And, you know, people were trying to grill all the meat in their refrigerator and freezer, you know, on gas-fired or wood-fired grills just to get it cooked so people could eat it and not waste it. And but so much went to waste, not to mention the inconvenience of life without electricity. And what's interesting is, if you kind of read what's going on, is we've already converted to a very electrical life, and as we move to clean renewable sources for our electric grid, which we're doing fairly significantly, and it's making a significant dent, it will help to provide more resilience for the electric grid. But a big part of what also has to happen, and you hit this on the head, is that we have to update the electrical grid to support this. And it's a different way of gathering power and distributing it. And there's a whole huge conversation about that. Matter of fact, there's a really good podcast I listened to, 99% Invisible by Roman Mars, a fair amount. And he had a great podcast on net metering. And net metering is when you have solar panels on your house and you're generating more electricity than you can use. Mm-hmm. It will turn backwards on your meter and put power back into the grid. And utility companies pay for that in many states. And it's through this concept called net metering. But it was a really interesting podcast that talked about how this whole concept came up and how utility companies are having to adapt to it, because there's a lot of us putting solar panels out there, and there will continue to be, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
now, that's a bigger choice. That's not necessarily a choice. Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the solar power industry is the biggest growing industry right now in the United States. I could be wrong, or even in the world.
It's growing fast. I don't know if it's the biggest or not. I'm with you, but it is definitely growing fast.
And I think a lot of it is because companies are tapping into that. And so they're making the panels affordable is you're not being stuck with this big, you know, they're just like, here, we're just going to charge you right along with your electric bill. We're going to make this work with your electric company. They're like doing everything. It's like, here, we're going to come put these on your house. You're going to start saving money.
Right.
It's not going to cost you. You know, they've like worked out that financial thing. And still people are hesitant to do it. But I think a lot of people are doing, like you said, it's growing.
Yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, for instance, a lot of homeowner associations aren't real sure about it yet because they don't want it detracting from curbside appeal. And so there's a lot of people that are figuring that out. There's different laws and regulations in every state, and they're not the same in any two states. And so you have to kind of figure it out in your state. But you're right, they're here anyway. And even without as many of the subsidies and the incentives as we had a few years ago, the price has come down enough that it's definitely an option for many of us to look at. And you pay for something over a certain number of years, or you can lease panels and just pay for the power. But it keeps on giving back. So it's a cool option. And we're seeing a lot of utility companies get in and install renewable energy as part of their electric generation portfolio. And we will continue to see that as well. So here's another simple choice, Jackie, that a lot of folks can make.
Okay.
Do a tad bit of research on the companies you buy products from and see if their values align with yours, because we each have the opportunity to vote with our pocketbook by what we buy and what we don't. So, for instance, I look for companies that have a sustainability plan and a sustainability commitment. And those are the companies that I choose to buy from. Occasionally, I end up buying from somebody that hasn't necessarily put it out there yet. So I don't know. And a lot of times it's because I don't have another choice on buying what I'm buying. You can go a step further with that and buy products that have what I call a green label. So a green label, just like you could certify a house, there's also programs out there to certify a product. So think of Energy Star, which is an energy efficient label for, oh my gosh, windows, electronics, TVs, computers, insulation, all kinds of stuff. There's a similar label for water efficient products called WaterSense. There's another label called the Green Guard label, or Green Guard, which says things have lower amounts of emissions, so that doesn't give off all the nasty stuff and the chemicals, the off-gassing. So these shortcuts, these third-party certifications, can be another way of voting with your pocketbook by simply knowing that the research has already been done by an accredited, trustworthy third-party organization. And that's something we hit on in the book, is using these green labels. Other thing I will suggest that a lot of people don't think of is making something last longer and work better, which is called maintenance. Now that's just sounds like work, doesn't it? Yuck. I don't want to do maintenance.
Or cost. It sounds to me, I'm thinking money, like got to take something to the mechanic, or, you know, to me, maintenance sounds like money that I don't want to spend.
That maintenance and that small amount of an investment of time and sometimes money that we make in maintenance helps to lengthen the lives of things in our home and our home itself. And a lot of the maintenance items that need to be performed on a home are pretty simple. So we devote almost an entire chapter in the book to simple seasonal maintenance things to do around your home. And I partnered with Tina Gleisner, and she's actually has a website called Home Tips for Women. And she and I partnered to create this maintenance checklist because we use it for our homeowner manual as well. And what I love about what Tina came up with is that she breaks everything down in maintenance into three categories. So the first is, if you have a little bit of time, then inspect. She gives you a list of what things to inspect. If you have a little more time, then do maintenance, maintain. And she gives you a list of things to maintain by season. And if you're really into doing something cool and you got a weekend warrior project going on, then we can do an update. And then she gives specifics for updates. So I absolutely love this three-tier approach that she came up with, because it's very approachable. It's very doable. It helps us to be closer to our homes. And, you know, if you touch things and you're watching things and you know what's going on with your home, and you're more apt to know when something's out of line or out of the right way of working. And you kind of just get that vibe. I remember years ago, I used to mow our own lawn. And after I'd mowed it for a while, I started getting the feel of the ground just from being out on it all the time. And I could tell just from walking the yard with the mower or out playing with the kids, I could tell if something was amiss. And I think so many of us pay to have so much stuff done that we kind of lose touch with what's going on. You know, it's kind of like touching the soil when you garden, right? Kind of get a feel for it. And it's the same thing with our homes. Definitely. And by the way,
absolutely,
maintaining your yard and your garden is part of that. So...
okay. Do you have a tip for maintaining your yard or garden? Like one simple, easy thing that maybe they would find, listeners might find?
Pull your weeds. Don't use Roundup. Roundup should not be in your home at all. And I apologize for using a brand name, but the chemicals in that particular product are being found in our food sources and our watersheds because our yards are not an independent system. When we water our yards or when it rains, the stormwater runoff carries in it whatever is on our yards and gardens. And if you're using a lot of chemicals that are very strong and don't break down easily in our natural environment, those chemicals get washed downstream into the watershed, into our fish, into our food supply, and they affect the whole system because everything's a system of systems. So there's my, anyway, that's a really easy tip. But pulling weeds is also, as you well know, the best way to get rid of them, and it's good hard work. It's just, I remember weeding as a kid, being in the garden with, that was one of the chores, you know, that we could choose weekly or monthly or whatever. And I always figured that nobody else in my two sisters, I still have two sisters. we always kind of drew the short straw to see who would weed because that was our least favorite thing to do. But I always remember once I got out there, it was kind of fulfilling to get rid of those weeds. And to this day, if I see a big growth of chickweed, I have to pull it. It's like this compulsion.
I know exactly what you mean. Yesterday, I was walking up from the garden, and there was a patch of spotted knapweed just going to flower. And, you know, that's when it's right about to go to seed. And I just grabbed it because not only that, it was so dry. I was like, that's going to pull right up. But what also, like, I don't really like to call it Roundup as much as the chemical, the glyphosate. The biggest thing I've learned from my podcast that, you know, I don't know, should have been a no-brainer, but I guess because we never use that stuff is that, you know, dogs run on your lawn, your pets are running on your lawn, your toddlers are learning how to crawl, yes. And that it might be, you know, not as bad for somebody who's a full-age grown-up, but having those kids down there sucking that right in, like, you know, if you do have somebody who does your lawn, you really want to make sure that your landscaper's not putting that stuff out there either.
Well, and I think how many people I know now that their dogs have cancer is scary. I never knew a dog to have cancer over 15 years ago. So this stuff seems to be building up in our environment. It's affecting us faster. There is so much research that's being done to show that cancers, you're more impacted by your environment and your lifestyle choices than your genetics for your risk of cancer. So I can't tell you how many people have told me, you know, over the past 10, 15, 20 years, oh, cancer just runs in my family. I'm doomed. Well, that's horse manure. You're not. You can control your...
No, usually it skips a generation anyway, I think.
I
don't know. I've had people tell me all sorts of different things. And like, I've even had doctors tell me like, oh, don't worry about not eating sugar or depriving yourself of things that you crave because cancer affects skinny people, healthy people, every kind of people. Like, I was like, seriously, you're...
Now that's a whole, oh my gosh, we could get on a 2-hour conversation just about that, Jackie. But it's all, here's what I want people to remember is this is all related. And if you're, I mean, how many of us grew up with and still abide by the golden rule? You know, treat others the way you want to be treated. Why does that not matter in how we treat our living environment? Because our living environment is not just us that get impacted. It's our neighbors. It's our community. It's our world. It's the people that come into our homes, the people that leave our homes, the people that live next door to our homes. We are not an island. And I think we've forgotten that. I think we've forgotten, and we kind of get this, oh, well, it just affects me kind of an attitude. And it will, doing anything to improve it is definitely going to affect you, but it's going to have a ripple effect too. And that ripple effect uplevels everybody. I have a friend that says rising tides raise all boats. Thank you, Matt Belcher. Matt Belcher is one of my mentors in the green home world. From St. Louis, but I always remember him saying that, and that just really stuck.
John Lee Dumas says that too. All boats rise on a high tide. his theory of abundance. All right, so speaking of this, I can't remember if it was in the pre-chatter when we started recording and stuff, but you were talking about helping people. One of your strengths is helping people get along and doing it without being confrontational. So do you have any tips for people? Like, because I have a feeling a lot of my listeners are going to be, you know, my audience, they're very, you know, a lot of this stuff's not going to be as new to them, but I'm sure they're challenged when they run. Like you were talking about the gas and oil executive who was like, oh, well, I'm not green. There's nothing I can do because I'm in the fossil fuel industry. Like, do you have some tips for listeners for what they can say to maybe relatives or friends or coworkers, colleagues? Seems to be the one that gets me a lot of the time.
And I'm a work in progress on this one, Jackie. But what I really kind of discovered is there's something, if you listen first, there's some concern that people have. There's something going on. And I'm starting to do a much better job of listening for an opening rather than making an opening. So, for instance, if my sister says something about, I can't believe that they're not recycling this thing in my curbside recycling. Okay, now that's a conversation that's opened up an opportunity for say, well, why does that bug you? What's going on? Tell me about it. And then we can have a conversation about other options. It's a slower process, but it's a gentler process. You mentioned the oil and gas executive that I met here in Oklahoma City. So I live in Oklahoma City now. I'd been in St. Louis for over 3 decades and just recently moved. I grew up in Oklahoma City, but it's a really different place from when I left many years ago. So I went to high school. I grew up here, went to high school in Oklahoma City, and then went to college in St. Louis and just stayed and raised a family and all that, and had an opportunity to move back to Oklahoma City, got married, to a guy I actually knew back in high school. So funny how those things come around. But both of my parents are still here and their spouses. So it's had this beautiful, you know, huge effect of me having time with my family as an adult, which is really cool, by the way.
Isn't that?
Oh my gosh, I'm enjoying it so much. It's such a gift. But also Oklahoma City in Oklahoma as a state are beef industries and oil and gas. Both of which are showing, the research is showing, both of those are major contributors to our climate changing. So, what, you know, I'm not going to run around going, oh, you bad people, what are you doing? Because this is the livelihood for thousands and thousands of people in this state. And people first, right? So when I met this oil and gas executive a few weeks ago, and by the way, it was in a very trendy part of town that's, you know, retro and coming back. And I love this revitalization that's going on in our major cities. And this was part that it was an art walk at this very trendy little neighborhood. And we got talking and he said, what do you do? And I said, well, I'm a green home coach. She goes, well, I work in the oil and gas industry. I'm sure I can't be green. And I'm like, well, why not? I said, you live somewhere, right? And he's like, well, yeah. And I said, well, you can do stuff in your home. You know, even if you are doing work that isn't necessarily what you would call green, and I'm air quoting green, you can still take actions in your home, in your life that contribute to the solution and aren't exacerbating the problems. And he kind of looked at me and goes, oh, I hadn't thought about that. So I think a lot of us are like, well, I'm in for a dime, I'm in for a dollar, I can't do anything, and we kind of write it off. We stick our heads in the sand, and we shouldn't. We all can do something. We all can do a little bit to impart change. And we are all, you, each of you listening, are part of the solution, whether you know what to do or don't. And I think the people that know things, that are into understanding the green lifestyle and the green homes, we have an opportunity to be ambassadors. We have an opportunity to share gently, very gently, to share with people what's working and why it's important to us. And we don't have to necessarily transfer our feelings and our values onto somebody else, but sharing those might open up somebody to something they had never considered, like this gentleman I met that was the oil and gas executive.
I have to send you a copy. I'm writing this book or working on this book called The Green Queen, and it's like the Green Queen may seem really mean, and she might even scream if she sees, you know, like your leaky faucet or you buying a styrofoam, getting coffee in a styrofoam cup or not using your grocery bags. And then the Green Queen may even beam if she sees you, you know, hanging your laundry on the line, or just, it's like all these things, you know, that drive me crazy that people do in my life that I just want to give them this book and be like, here. And, but the other thing I was going to say, that my audience, like, my Facebook, so many people, you know, there's the Facebook lovers and there's the Facebook haters. And my Facebook feed the day after Donald Trump was elected was so full of hope and people like in shock and awe. But at the same time, I just had this serious, and it's so amazing to me, my Facebook feed, because there's friends I went to high school with and people I've worked, I've had 53 jobs now. So, and people from all these different places, from everywhere, from like, you know, delivering the paper to working at a health food store to teaching at a preschool to, you know, working at the UN or at Apple or just, I don't know, I've had so many jobs and just all these different people. But the overall thread throughout it was, this is our opportunity to share. We, all right, something's happened. Yep. We're all in shock. But it was such a powerful hopefulness from all this diversity of friends of mine, from Paris to Alaska to Australia to just all these different people, that very similar to what you're saying is that, well, here's our opportunity. And even like my mom started this like little progressive women's political activist group that's like having these meetings once a month or something, and they're learning about, after for years she's always been like, nope, 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 that's not me, that's not me. You know, I have all my little, you know, my garden club and my tennis club and my, you know, I do my own things to help the planet, but I'm not getting involved. And now she even has a little group where they're working for women's rights and human rights and education and just equal pay and just different things that, to me, it spurred a lot of grassroots organizations and different things. And then, you know, that's another thing I love about the millennials is that millennials, you know, are very into more talking to their friends and getting, sharing opinions with their friends and liking things like that. So I don't
know. You said something very impactful though, Jackie.
Hope. What was that?
Hope.
Yeah.
And hope is part of the magic trio, faith, hope, and love, that fulfills us as human beings. So if we have hope, we can do all kinds of things. And I agree with you. I think there is hope. And I think we have to keep talking about that hope. But we also have to help people take action so that can spread. And that's what I think so many of us are really doing. And I love the fact that I'm seeing more people like your mom get involved and pay attention. And some are running for office, some are joining groups, some are talking about it. And I love that. And that's what we need to do with this whole idea of green homes and green living, is make it part of the conversation. Because the more we talk about it, the more we'll do it. And I know we're about done with our time, but I'd like to leave you with this, if I can, with this brief piece that I wrote that kind of explains what we're all about.
Perfect.
May I do that?
Yes.
Okay. So climate change is really starting to become a major factor in our lives. And according to research, 64% of us now believe climate change is real and caused by humans. And 51% of us are anxious about climate change and its effect. And even those who consider ourselves and our lifestyles green or sustainable may not yet have connected the dots that our homes are major contributors to climate change. So we've been living in a solution all along and we haven't known it. So this is what we do here at Green Home Coach. We help you know. We help you find the ways to be the change in the world that you want to be. We help you find the things you can do in your home right now and in the future to make your home, doesn't matter if you own it, you rent it, to help it be part of the solution. Because I really believe that we all want to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem. But it's hard to figure it out. It's hard to figure out what we can do without having to cause major upheaval in our modern lifestyles, especially with so many of us being urban or suburban dwellers, and we kind of feel stuck in that same pattern of life. We buy the same products, we run around and take care of our home the same way, in our yard, And we stay in those same habits because we don't know what we don't know. And that's what we do. We provide actionable, easy to understand things that you can do in your home to make it part of the solution. And we provide inspiration and information from experts and resources about everything from choosing your kitchen appliances and plumbing fixtures to making your yard a magnet for butterflies. We talk about the necessaries too, like tightening up your home, maintaining and operating the stuff in your home, and just turning stuff off. So in a nutshell, that's what we believe. We believe that it does not have to be hard or require sacrifice to have a green or greener home. And that many times you may not even know that a home has that stuff in it because it just is home.
Aw, I love that. That was perfect. So tell listeners one more time how to connect with you, how to find your website. And then the, well, I was going to say, is your book on Audible?
Not yet. Okay. Not yet.
So
right now, if you go to greenhomecoach.com, everything is on greenhomecoach.com. The book with purchase links, the podcast notes, as well as a link to listen to all the podcasts, other resources that we offer. And we're going to be coming out with a program to teach people what a green home is and why it matters. And that'll be out in the fall of 2017. So that'll be up on that website. If people want to get on our news list, they can sign up there. And then Green Gab, our podcast, is also available on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, just like yours is. And I can't wait till we record again and we can have you come on Green Gab.
Aw, well, thanks. I'm excited. So I'm trying to break out of my comfort zone and actually get on other people's podcasts this summer.
Me too.
So.
Yeah, me too. But it's a great way to cross audiences and introduce people to a whole bunch of new stuff, which I love.
It is. And I think my listeners are going to love hearing this episode and learning about something else they can do besides their garden to make their home a green home. And I just want to encourage listeners, if they get themselves a copy of your book, Living Green Effortlessly, Simple Choices to a Better Home, that they go to Amazon and leave your review because the reviews are key. And so,
yes, thank you.
And I know you're going to find some tips there. And I'm always big on leaving reviews on Amazon. So thanks so much for being an awesome guest today. We went way longer than I thought we would, but that always happens to me. My husband's always laughing. He's like, yeah, you're going to keep it at 35 minutes. I'm sure. Just don't even try.
But, I understand.
thanks so much for sharing everything with us and have a great day.
Thank you, Jackie. Everybody have a wonderful day.
Hey, Green Future Growers, don't forget to go to theorganicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 to get notified when the Organic Gardener Podcast 2018 journal, garden journal, and data keep it is ready. Mike and I want to help you build your very own organic oasis. And so we're kind of giving you a space to write your general garden goals for the year. There's a place to list them by month, by week. Someplace to record what you're eating as well as what you're growing, what you're spending the most money on, what you're digging out of your garden the most of, what recipes you're cooking, and just kind of give you an idea of what's happening with your food for 2018. So don't forget to go to organicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 to sign up on our landing page for notifications when the journal is ready. Hope you have a wonderful day and thanks again. If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening and remember to grow.